Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Christmas and New Year's Eve is approaching, so it's time for the traditional Christmas episode of Luke's English Podcast, the last episode for 2018. In this one, I'm going to read some Christmas stories and a couple of poems, which are a bit different to the normal stuff that you get at this time of year. Also, keep listening for a funny appearance by the Beatles as well. This episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored today by Spoken. With Spoken, it's like having an English teacher in your pocket. Basically, they offer learning plans that involve doing different tasks on your phone using messaging apps like WeChat, Line, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Viber, and other messaging platforms like that. Basically, you chat with an English instructor from Spoken, and they send you different tasks which are adapted to your needs. The offer from Spoken to you, my listeners, is this. So they're offering you a free one-hour one-to-one lesson with a free assessment of your English skills, then 20% off the first month of any learning plan that you choose. So you can take the, you could just take the one-hour lesson, and then it's up to you if you choose to go with the learning plan. So there are no strings attached. To get that offer, go to getspoken.com/LEP or click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing? Now, some of you might be thinking, Luke, I know it's Christmas and it's a time of giving, but why are you uploading so many episodes at the moment? We can't keep up. That's what some of you might be thinking. Well, the Christmas holiday is about to start, and then I'll be quiet for a few weeks. So I'm giving you quite a lot of stuff now for you to listen to while I'm away. And that includes this episode, in which I would like to wish you a very Merry Christmas, if you celebrate it, and a Happy New Year too, and then ramble to you a little bit, and then tell you one or two Christmas-themed stories, read a couple of Christmassy poems, and then there will be an appearance by the Beatles as well, as you'll hear later on. First of all, though, a bit of a ramble, which hopefully won't be too long. Okay, so I've uploaded a lot recently. There's been new free podcast episodes, the Collins Words of the Year series, new phrasal verb episodes, and also new premium episodes. It's quite a lot of stuff, I know, which might be difficult to keep up with. But as I've said, I won't be uploading for a few weeks, so it should be enough time for everyone to catch up. So while I'm away on holiday, there's quite a lot of stuff for you all to listen to. Just yesterday, I uploaded another series, three parts, another series of premium episodes for December, and that series is all about language from the Alan Partridge episodes I did in October. They were popular episodes and they were full of really nice language. I mean, like descriptive vocabulary and noun phrases and adjective phrases that I used to talk about Alan, and also various other expressions, phrases, and bits of grammar that came up in the clips that we listened to. So I devoted a couple of premium episodes to that and uploaded them yesterday, and also the usual memory tests and pronunciation drills. PDF worksheets as well are available for all of the premium episodes. There are also new phrasal verb episodes in the premium package now too, and more arriving on a regular basis. You're welcome. If you want to become a premium Lepster, go right ahead, be my guest. You'll get access to all of the premium content in the ever-growing library, including those Alan Partridge language analysis episodes that I uploaded yesterday, and all the other stuff that I've ever, all the other things in the premium library, you'll get access to all of it, all of the old stuff, and the stuff that will be published in the future. That's what you get if you become a premium Lepster. teacherluke.co.uk/premium to get started. And you'll be supporting the podcast as well with a small monthly contribution, about the price of a coffee or a beer every month. And, you know, I tell you what, I am super duper chuffed, which means I'm very pleased to finally be making premium episodes and having this project alongside the normal episodes of the podcast. I hope that those of you out there who are already premium Lepsters, I hope that you're getting into the work that I've been doing. I work quite a lot on those premium episodes. I really sort of get my head down and do lots of work on it. So I hope you've been appreciating and enjoying and getting into that work and getting stuff out of it. Thank you for your support for the podcast too. You're making it possible for me to spend more time on this, and that's going to help me to improve and develop what I'm doing. It's been a pretty good year for Luke's English Podcast. What about you? How's your year been? For the podcast, it's been a pretty good year with lots of episodes about different things. I hope that you've enjoyed them all and found them useful for your English. The year started with the birth of our daughter, and I talked about it with my wife in episode 502. That's about 65 episodes ago. Can you believe it? I've done 65 episodes of the podcast this year, plus all the premium ones. It's been quite a productive year. So episode 502, that's when you first heard my wife's voice on the podcast. We talked about the birth of our daughter. That was quite a popular episode. Sometimes during the year, I think that you heard the voice of my daughter in episodes as well, sometimes, like little noises and sounds that she was making when I was recording stuff while she was in the flat with me. That may happen more and more as she grows up. She's not really speaking yet. She's not really saying words, although she is walking. She's making more and more complex noises, though. Not exactly speaking, but just kind of making sounds with different bits of intonation and stuff. Sometimes things that sound like questions, or things that sound like she's going, yay! You know, she kind of, her range of expression is expanding all the time, like every day. Sometimes she makes a new sound that I haven't heard before, and it's kind of, wow, that's amazing. She started doing this thing, right, where she lifts objects to her ear, and she kind of goes, hello? Now, she obviously doesn't say hello. She kind of goes, ebbe, like ebbe, like that. She makes a sound that sounds like hello, as if she's speaking on the telephone. She does it with her bottle. So she does this thing in the evening. I'll give her her bottle. She'll finish it. She's holding it in her hands. She'll finish it. I give her the top, and she kind of puts the top on the bottle, and she gets all pleased because she's finished and she's put the top on. And then she holds the bottle for a while. And then the other day, she lifted the bottle to her ear, and she went, ebbe, like that. Now, I mean, maybe that was just a random noise, but it looked to me like she was putting it to her ear like it's a telephone. And apparently at daycare, she does go around with a little plastic telephone, and she holds it to her ear and walks around as if she's on the telephone. Which is really funny, because I've no idea where she got that from, because at home, we usually use our headphones when we're on the phone. So maybe she's seen someone at the daycare center, like holding a phone to their head. And so she's kind of copying them. So she does that with a bottle. And we started doing this stupid thing like just this week. She finishes the bottle, holds it to her ear and kind of goes, "Eh?" like that. And then I take the bottle, if she lets me have it, because sometimes she will hold on. But I'll take the bottle, and then I pretend to answer the phone too. I'm like, hello? Yeah. Like, pretend to have a conversation. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's just here. Uh-huh. Yeah, do you want to speak to her? And then I look at my daughter, and I give her the bottle, and I say, it's for you. And I give her the bottle, and she takes it, and she puts it to her ear again and goes, a bit like that. It's just, I don't know. You're probably like, that's not impressive, Luke. For me, that's impressive. That's the kind of stuff that impresses you when you're a new parent. She also understands various things that my wife and I say to her in both languages. She's also very fond of pointing at things and kind of going, like, what's that? So sometimes I'll just be carrying her and she'll just be pointing at everything. She'll wake up from a nap. She'll be waking up. She might be crying a bit. And then I pick her up and sort of carry her around and she kind of wakes up a bit. And then suddenly she's like, like, what's that? I'm like, that's a door. And what's that? That's a window. And that's the door. I already told you what that was. And she's just like turning left, right and pointing at things like that. Fascinating, isn't it? I don't know what you think of that. But anyway, I think as she speaks more, I'm sure I'll record her sometime so that you can hear her learning to speak over the next few years. I'm looking forward to that. Talking of learning to speak and learning English, I just want to give a shout out to my students at the British Council. Some of them listen to this podcast. So hello, students from the British Council, my students in my classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays. Hello to my students. Some of them listen to my podcast. I teach four groups of students at the British Council at the moment across different levels. They're all adult learners of English, and we've had some great classes over the last year. So hello, if you're listening. I want to share a video, actually, with all of you, not just the British Council people, but everyone. I want to share a video that some of my students were involved in. So at the British Council in Paris, we offer a social program, which is called English Extra, which involves things like social events, drinks, talks by teachers and guests. I did a talk about British humour, if you remember. And also weekend trips to London on the Eurostar. And the idea is that it gives our students more opportunities to socialise in English and get more talking time in English, basically. Also, it's just a lot of fun. And we have some really outgoing, funny and social people in our adult classes at the moment, including in my classes, which is great because it means, you know, when you've got like, you know, sociable, interesting people in your classes, it means that we have a lot of fun while also learning English. So some of them went to London recently, and as part of the trip, they made a little video for YouTube, and it's called How Much Do Londoners Know About France? Okay, so the students went around in London interviewing British people in the street, asking them various questions about France. And the results are pretty embarrassing from a British person's point of view, I must say. I mean, you've seen videos like that. Normally they involve Americans, right? Normally it's people going around interviewing Americans and asking them about geography. And they don't know, like they've got no idea where Australia is or what Africa is and stuff. And it's like, aren't the Americans stupid? I'm not, you know, they're not all stupid, but I don't know. It seems that when you ask people questions in the street, they just are incapable of answering. I don't know what it is about being in the street that's like, you know, can you tell me your name? I'm sorry, I don't know. I'm in the street. I can't think. I'm in the street. Anyway. So the results of this video are also pretty embarrassing because it turns out that the average Londoner doesn't seem to know that much about their nearest continental neighbours, France. To be honest, I wonder if the same thing would be true about the French. You know, I wonder if you went round and asked the average French person on the streets of Paris various questions about England, they probably wouldn't know either because they're in the street. Because if you ask anyone a question in the street, they're incapable of answering. Even if it's like, what's one plus one? I don't know. Amsterdam? Just something about being in the street. Anyway, so to be honest, I wonder if the same would be true about the French, and I think it probably would be. Anyway, the video is pretty funny, and I want to share what my students did. So check it out. You'll see the full video on the page for this episode. I also shared it on social media today. So check out that video. It's called How Much Do Londoners Know About France? Right, so how about you then? How's it going? This is a Christmas episode. But what about you? Do you celebrate Christmas wherever you are? Is Christmas a thing? Obviously, you might not celebrate it. It might not be a thing in your life wherever you are. So I don't know. Do you have any plans? What are you doing for Christmas? Is this something that you celebrate in your country? And do you have any plans? I imagine that New Year is probably the bigger thing around the world. Not everyone in the world does Christmas, obviously, but I think New Year's Eve is more of an event around the world. What are you doing this year, Luke? What are your plans? Don't talk about it for too long, but just tell us. Okay, so this year we're going to spend some time with my wife's family first in France on the 24th and 25th. That's Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, doing Christmas the French way, which involves things like champagne, of course, drinking champagne. Although at the moment, I'm actually off the booze. You heard me say that to Amber on the podcast recently. I've stopped drinking alcohol at the moment, I might have to make an exception for Christmas. I don't know. But I'm feeling pretty good cutting out alcohol. I managed to do it. And it's been, I don't know how long, 6 weeks more that I haven't had any booze. And I feel good. I feel slimmer. I've lost weight. I feel a bit more clear-headed. My memory is better. I mean, I didn't used to drink that much. I wasn't like a crazy binge-drinking football hooligan or anything. But I used to drink sometimes, and sometimes if I'd had a couple of glasses of wine or a couple of beers, I would wake up in the morning kind of like, oh, what? Who's the president? What year is it? You know, and or just a lingering feeling of like, oh, trying to catch up, you know. But since I stopped drinking alcohol, I feel a bit more sharp and just a bit more healthy. So anyway, I'm going to see if I can keep that up. But anyway, so on Boxing Day, which is now also our daughter's birthday. That's the 26th of December. Yeah, she was born on the 26th of December, the poor girl. It's no fun to have your birthday at Christmas. It really isn't, especially like the day after Christmas when everyone's like, I don't want to celebrate anything anymore. It's your birthday. Oh, who cares? It's Jesus's birthday, not your birthday. So the poor girl has to celebrate her birthday at Christmas. But we're going to make a big day of it now. So it's not just Boxing Day anymore. It's her birthday. So on Boxing Day, we're going to go to the UK to spend about a week at my parents' house, which will be great. My mum and dad are looking forward to seeing us. But mainly I think they mainly want to see their granddaughter. They're like, we don't care about you anymore. Just let her see her granddaughter. Partially true. Partially. It's cool, though. She seems to get a boost when she sees them. It's funny. She loves music and she'll dance and clap her hands when you play music to her. And my dad plays the guitar, so he kind of gets the guitar out and he plays songs to her. It's amazing, actually. I don't know how he remembers all these songs. He's like, these are old songs from when he was in the Scouts. Like songs that he used to sing with his friends around the campfire. And he just gets the guitar out. It's been decades and he just remembers them all. I don't know how he does it. So I'm currently educating our daughter in the ways of the Beatles, playing Beatle music to her every day. Hopefully that's going to help somehow. I don't know. It might backfire. Maybe she'll just end up completely sick of it and she'll grow up hating the Beatles because I played it their music to her so much. I don't know. Hopefully she'll grow to like their music like I do and my parents do. We're going to keep it in the family, you know. So I'll be on holiday from the moment that I publish this episode. That's when my holiday officially begins, until sometime in early 2019. Okay. Now, I'm not sure when the podcast will be back exactly, but you've got plenty of content to keep you busy in the meantime, right? Although I understand that if you're listening to this, you might already have heard all the other stuff. But since there's been so much, it may be worth going back and revisiting and listening more carefully. If you fancy listening to me more carefully, it's up to you, isn't it? All the recent episodes and the premium content, right? So, by the way, in those premium episodes, it's not just all serious and boring language work. I still like to have a laugh there too. It's just that there's more of a focus on teaching you language and helping you to practice your pronunciation. All right, then. So that's enough rambling at the beginning. Let me talk to you about these sort of alternative Christmas stories. That's the title of this episode, I think. Alternative Christmas stories, poems, jokes. There may be a joke or two in there. And the Beatles. All right. So while I was preparing for this episode, I was scouring the internet, like searching intently around the internet for good stuff relating to Christmas. Because every year I do some sort of Christmas episode. A few years ago, I read out A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, which is a great Christmas story. I wanted to do something like that. I wanted to read a story to you. So I was scouring the internet for good stuff relating to Christmas, like stories mainly. I wanted to read a good Christmas story or a couple of short stories or something. And honestly, I haven't found much. I haven't really found much that's good that I could read out. Most of the stuff I found is quite cheesy and crap, to be honest. So it's been a bit difficult to find the right things. But I kept searching, and ultimately I did find some things which I thought were worth sharing with you. So this year, after searching and thinking, I've come up with, well, one funny little story, some slightly odd poems with a Christmas theme, and also a funny Christmas tradition from somewhere in Europe, and also the Beatles. Now, as I said, most of the stories with a Christmas theme that I found online were quite cheesy and cliched. And that's a bit dull. You know, the cliches of Christmas, you know, just all the same sort of stuff like Santa and snow and all that kind of thing. And obviously all the, you know, the more respectable and traditional Christian themes and religious themes and stuff. I did find several stories which are a bit different, or maybe you could say alternative. And by that, I mean that they take a different look at Christmas time. Normally, you imagine Christmas, it all has to be rosy and cozy and lovely and warm and pleasant and warm and fuzzy feelings, right? This is what we normally associate with Christmas, which is great because that's Christmas time, isn't it? That's the spirit of Christmas. But these stories and poems that I've found are quite weird and a bit dark too in some places. But I've decided that's okay because I'd rather have some weirdness and some funniness than the usual Christmas stuff about sleigh bells, reindeers and all those other cliched tropes of Christmas. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I do love the coziness of Christmas when you're indoors with your family, as long as you're not trying to kill each other. Eating nice food, probably prepared by someone else, possibly. Probably your mum, or my mum in this case. Thanks, mum, if you're listening. And generally, having a lovely and jolly time. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what Crimbo is all about. But I'm sure that you're getting plenty of that stuff everywhere else, right? Like in shops, in bars, on TV, on the radio, online. I mean, you're being already inundated with all the lovely, nice, fuzzy, Christmassy stuff. I mean, I don't know where you are, but certainly in the UK, you start to get inundated with the usual Christmas stuff from as early as November these days, and it starts to become a bit annoying after a while, I have to say. For example, the Christmas songs that you hear everywhere. You might just wander into a supermarket or a shop or a bar or something, and it's just Christmas music, and it's just like, well, the weather outside is and boo-de-boo, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, and outside it's 16 degrees and raining. And then, you know, it's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. Like, I know he did. That, have you heard that song? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, right? Which is like one of the classic songs from Christmas time. I was listening to that the other day and I realized that the other reindeer, so basically in this story, Rudolph was one of the reindeer. The reindeer are those animals, they're kind of like large deer that Father Christmas uses to pull his sleigh. His sleigh is like the kind of vehicle that he rides through the snow, and it's magic, of course. He flies through the air in it, doesn't he? On it. And the sleigh is full of Christmas presents, and so there's reindeer in the front. And the song is like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And he's like Santa's favorite reindeer. The story goes that he had a very shiny nose. So Rudolph's got a red shiny nose. And in the story it goes, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. All of the other reindeer. What is it? All the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. What bastards they were. I just realized the other day, I was like, those other reindeer, they're right. Right bastards, aren't they? Just a bunch of bullies. Anyway, that's just what I thought. Then other songs, like you get things like all the typical Christmas pop songs. Like I heard the other day, Driving Home for Christmas by Chris Rea. You know, the British musician Chris Rea. Alan Partridge is a fan of Chris Rea. Let's have a little sample of Driving Home for Christmas. This might end up being a long episode at this rate. Anyway, Driving Home for Christmas. Here we go. Oh, yes. You know it's Christmas when you start to hear this song played in some shop somewhere or on the radio. It's all about Chris Rea driving home for Christmas. Driving home to see his family. I don't know where he lives, but he obviously lives far away from his family. And every year, he starts to make this journey.
I'm driving home for Christmas.
Now, I sometimes hear this song in, like, November, early November. I'm like, is Chris Rea already driving home for Christmas? How far away does he live from his hometown? He has to start driving in early November. Like, flipping heck. Can't he, like, take a train or just a plane or something? I mean, learn your lesson from last year, Chris. Just, helicopter? I don't know.
Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas.
Okay, it's a classic. Driving home for Christmas. I can't wait to see those faces. And, so there's that. All right, so that's the usual typical stuff that you get. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with all that stuff, but it is everywhere all the time. Okay, so instead of that kind of stuff, here are some alternative takes on Christmas time. Some funny-ish stuff, some weird stuff, some slightly disgusting stuff, some slightly dark stuff. And then the Beatles as well, as you'll hear later. This could be a long one. Doesn't matter though, does it? It's Christmas. It's a time for giving. So let's start with a funny little story that I found on a website called funnyjokes.com. Okay. And the story is called The Missing £5 Note. All right. You can see the text for this story on the page for this episode. And you can find other funny jokes and stories by going to funny-jokes.com. Okay, so you could read along with me if you like. So here it is, the missing £5 note. Okay, so here it goes. Chippenham George, that's the name of the character. I don't know why he's called Chippenham George, but he is. Chippenham George worked for the post office, and his job was to process all the mail that had illegible addresses. Illegible means it's impossible to read it. Like if handwriting, you know, when people write by hand, sometimes people's handwriting is illegible, isn't it? So Chippenham George worked for the post office and his job was to process all the mail that had illegible addresses. All right. One day, just before Christmas, a letter landed on his desk, simply addressed in shaky handwriting to God, with no other clue on the envelope. George opened the letter and he read this. This was what the letter said, written to God. And it said, "Dear God, I am a 93-year-old widow living on the state pension. Yesterday, someone stole my purse. It had £100 in it, which was all the money I had in the world, and no pension due until after Christmas. Next week is Christmas, and I had invited two of my friends over for Christmas lunch. But without that money, I have nothing to buy food with. I have no family to turn to, and you are my only hope. God, can you please help me?" Now, Chippenham George was really touched. He was like, oh, this poor woman. And being a kind-hearted person, he put a copy of the letter up on the staff notice board at the main sorting office where he worked. The letter touched the other postmen and postwomen as they all dug into their pockets and had a whip round. If you have a whip round, ladies and gents, that's when you all contribute a little bit of money in order to, like, buy a gift for someone or something like that. Like, it's Dave's birthday, we're having a whip round. Okay, so the letter touched all the postmen, and they all dug into their pockets and they had a whip round. And between them, they raised £95. okay? £95 is what they raised. Remember that the old lady originally had £100, which, what happened to it? Someone stole her purse that contained £100, so she lost it. So the staff managed to whip round and collect £95. And using an officially franked post office envelope, they sent the cash on to the old lady. And for the rest of the day, all the workers felt a warm glow, thinking of the nice thing that they'd done. They're like, we did a really nice thing, didn't we, getting that money to that old woman? I think we should feel very pleased with ourselves for doing a very good thing. Merry Christmas, everyone. Christmas came and went. A few days later, another letter, simply addressed to God, landed in the sorting office. Many of the postmen gathered around while George opened the letter. And this is what it read. Dear God, how can I ever thank you enough for what you did to me? Because of your generosity, I was able to provide a lovely luncheon for my friends. We had a very nice day, and I told my friends of your wonderful gift. In fact, we still haven't got over it, and even Father John, our parish priest, is beside himself with joy. By the way, there was £5 missing. I think it must have been those thieving fellows at the post office. Ha ha ha. George could not help musing on Oscar Wilde's quote, "A good deed never goes unpunished." Did you get it, ladies and gentlemen? I know some of you are like, what? Did I miss something? Yeah, you did. So, in a nutshell, I mean, most of you got it, right? But for that one person who's like, oh, wait a minute, I missed something. So, all right, I'll tell you the story in a nutshell, right? Here's what happened, okay? Here's the basic version in a nutshell. So there's an old woman, right? There's this old lady, yeah? No, there's this geezer, right, called Chippenham George. Don't know why he's called Chippenham George, but doesn't matter. And he works in the post office, okay? And it's his job to, like, deal with all the letters that have illegible addresses. Like, you know, addresses written in handwriting you just can't read. So that's his job, to deal with those things. One day, he gets a letter, and it's all it says on the front is, "To God." And he's like, oh, all right, might as well have a look. So he opens it up, okay? And he pulls out the letter. And inside the letter, there's a woman from, like, in shaky handwriting from some... There's a woman? No, there's a letter. What a strange, flat woman made of paper. No, there was a letter in there written by an old woman in shaky handwriting, and it said, "Dear God, something terrible happened to me. I'm an old lady. I'm 93 years old. I'm an old lady, and I don't have any family, and I live on a state pension. And the other day, someone stole my purse, and it contained all the money I had in the world, £100. And since I've got no money and no state pension arriving until January, there's nothing I can do. I was planning to have some friends round. I was going to make them a lovely lunch, but I can't do it anymore. Is there anything you can do, God? Please, God, please, please. Dear God, signed, old lady." And Chippenham George was like, oh, this is a sad story. Maybe there's something we could do here at the post office. So he went to everyone. All right, everyone, have a look at this letter. And he pinned it up on the notice board, and everyone looked at it, and they all felt sort of very sympathetic. So they all decided to have a whip round. They're like, right, we're going to have a whip round for the old lady. Just put what you can in the bag, and we're going to send it on to her. All right. So they got together some money. They got together £95, and they sent it on to the old lady, and they spent the rest of the day feeling very pleased with themselves and warm and fuzzy feelings, and like, oh, we did a good thing. Then Christmas came and went, and in the new year, Chippenham George got another letter from the same old lady addressed to God. And inside it said, "Dear God, thank you so much for what you did. You really are brilliant. I managed to provide lunch for my friends, and even the local priest was absolutely delighted. Just fantastic. Oh, by the way, it was only £95, so there was £5 missing. I think it was the people who work at the post office. Those horrible thieves at the post office must have taken it." Meh. That's it. That's the story. It's the best I could find. It's not a bad one, though, is it? It's not a bad one. So the Oscar Wilde quote is quite appropriate here, which is this: "A good deed never goes unpunished," which is sort of an ironic thing to say, but it's sort of true, isn't it? That sometimes when you go out of your way to do something good, sometimes you don't necessarily get something good in return every time. In fact, sometimes you kind of pay for it. It's weird. Ironic in life, isn't it? That you might go out of your way to do something good and you sort of pay for it. So a good deed never goes unpunished. Yeah, not exactly your normal Christmas message, is it? Don't be generous. It's just not worth it. I don't know. But anyway, it's a funny little story. Now, poetry. Oh, and you might be thinking, whoa, 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 poetry. That's not my cup of tea. I prefer violence. No. I don't know what you're like. But maybe you're more into computer games. Anyway, poetry. Some poetry is great. Now, I'm going to read three poems by modern authors. These are modern poems. And poems like these are good. They're written in plain English. So it's not all that kind of fancy, impenetrable language. It's just plain English. And they have a rhythm and a rhyme to them. Okay, the rhythm is like the rhythm that you've got to use to read the poem. And the rhyme, obviously, is that some of the words at the end of each line rhyme with each other. And this is great for learning English. These sorts of poems in normal English with rhythm and rhyme are great. It's a good idea to practice saying them yourselves. See if you can get the rhythm right. See if you can notice which words rhyme with each other. Okay, so I've got three poems for you. Again, they are alternative poems. So they've got a slightly more, slightly darker, maybe more cynical view of things. Okay, all right. So the first one is by Roald Dahl. Everyone's favorite author, Roald Dahl, who's, you know about Roald Dahl. I read one of his stories on the podcast this year. I read The Hitchhiker. Roald Dahl is amazing. Well, he was. He's unfortunately not with us anymore. But he wrote some really great stories for kids, but also a lot of stories for adults as well. He had a dark sense of humor. He was a bit sort of, he wrote some twisted things in his time. But that's what's fun about him, is he took certain ideas and twisted them and kind of made them a bit ironic and weird and a bit dark sometimes. So this is an alternative Christmas poem from Roald Dahl. And it goes like this. And it's all about Mother Christmas. So, you know, Father Christmas, who everyone talks about, and he's everywhere all the time, and he gets all the glory, doesn't he, Father Christmas? Well, this poem is about Mother Christmas. And it goes like this. Mother Christmas, where art thou, Mother Christmas? I only wish I knew why Father should get all the praise, and no one mentions you. I'll bet you buy the presents and wrap them large and small, while all the time that rotten swine pretends he's done it all. So hail to Mother Christmas, who shoulders all the work, and down with Father Christmas, that unmitigated jerk. All right, just a simple little funny poem. So any language that we can get from that? Well, we've got Where Art Thou, Mother Christmas, which is kind of like, sounds Shakespearean. So that is quite old-fashioned language, but it's done on purpose. Where art thou, meaning where are you? I only wish I knew why Father Christmas should get all the praise and no one mentions you. I bet you buy the presents, meaning I'm certain that you buy the presents, or I'm sure, I'm pretty sure, and wrap them large and small. Obviously, wrap presents, W-R-A-P, when you cover the presents in paper. And all the time, that rotten swine... A swine is another word for a pig, and it's just a word that you use to... It's like a word to describe someone you don't like or someone who is mean. I don't think Father Christmas is mean, but that's the funny thing, you know. It's kind of like, it's kind of funny that he's calling Father Christmas a rotten swine. All the time, that rotten swine pretends he's done it all. So in this version of events, Father Christmas is going around getting all of the glory, where it's actually Mother Christmas who does all the hard work. Which may be kind of true in some families. And he says, so hail to Mother Christmas. Hail is like when you sort of worship someone. Hail to Mother Christmas, who shoulders all the work. If you shoulder something, it's like you carry it all on your shoulder. And down with Father Christmas, like kind of going boo to Father Christmas. That unmitigated jerk. A jerk is like an idiot or a... it's not really rude. It's not a nice thing to say about someone. If someone is a jerk, it means they're what's a good word? An unrude word for a jerk. an idiot, a contemptible person, someone you don't like, basically. Okay, jerks are usually selfish bastards, basically. Okay, so if someone is unmitigated, it means that they, well, mitigate something means to make it less. I mean, make it less bad. Okay, so if someone is an unmitigated jerk, it means he's a total jerk, basically. All right, there you go. Let's move on to two more poems. Both of these are written by a poet called Roger McGough. Roger McGough. Now, Roger McGough, let me just read you a little bit about him. So Roger McGough, by the way, is from Liverpool and was part of a poetry group there in the 60s called The Scaffold. The Scaffold is actually kind of quite a famous group of poets from Liverpool in the 1960s. But Roger McGough has written poetry all the way through this period from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and he's still going. And so, Roger McGough was a member of The Scaffold. Have you ever heard of The Scaffold? Well, you might have done, because they kind of fit into the Beatles story in a way. Another member of The Scaffold was Mike McCartney, Paul McCartney's brother. And so we used to read Roger McGough's poems when we were children. I remember I had a couple of books of Roger McGough's poems. And so he used to write a lot of funny little poems for kids. But some of his work is actually really good for adults. It's not too fancy or pretentious. It's written in plain English. And for me, it does exactly what poetry should do. It makes you feel something inside. Sometimes his poetry is a bit mysterious. Sometimes you need to read between the lines. I also like his brief style. And I like the fact that Roger McGough, sometimes less is more with him, as we'll see. So this is a poem called Alternative Santa, a Christmas poem. And it's a kind of comment on Christmas today, what Christmas is like today in the world of Amazon and internet shopping. So here is Alternative Santa by Roger McGough. And it goes like this. "I'm fed up looking like Father Christmas," muttered Father Christmas one year. "I need a new outfit. I must move with the times. So for a start, it's goodbye reindeer." He googled alternative Santas and was amazed at the stuff that appeared. He got rid of the holly red costume, had a haircut, and shaved off his beard. Spent his days in front of a computer, in a cave hollowed out of the ice, wearing a t-shirt emblazoned Merry Christmas and jeans Amazon Armani, half price. Couldn't wait to straddle his snow ped, the bargain he'd bought on eBay. A rocket-powered silver toboggan, his supersonic sleigh. Then, one morning, he thought, oh, why bother delivering presents by hand, when it could all be done online? Busy parents will understand. We're lucky to live in a digital age, where the aim is access and speed. SantaNet, I'll call the system. Santafaction guaranteed. And that was years and years ago. Times that children barely know. Midnight mass and mistletoe. Christmas carols and candle glow. Sleigh bells ringing across the snow. And Santa singing yo-ho-ho. For that was years and years ago. And that was years and years ago. So that poem originally appeared in the Telegraph newspaper on the 7th of December 2013. But what does it mean? Well, let's have a little look at it again. "I'm fed up looking like Father Christmas," muttered Father Christmas one year. So basically Father Christmas is saying, oh, I'm tired of looking like Father Christmas. He said, "I need a new outfit. I must move with the times. So for a start, it's goodbye reindeer." So Father Christmas has decided to modernise. And he's saying, well, first thing, goodbye reindeer. So he's getting rid of the reindeer. He googled alternative Santas. Just like the idea of Father Christmas googling something. And he was amazed at the stuff that appeared. He got rid of the holly red costume. Holly red. Holly. Holly is a kind of a tree, a bush. and it's one of the symbols of Christmas. Holly leaves are like green spiky leaves, and they have red berries. So the red berry is a kind of red, so holly red. He got rid of the holly red costume, had a haircut and shaved off his beard. Spent his days in front of a computer in a cave hollowed out of the ice. Wearing a t-shirt emblazoned. If something is emblazoned, it means it's got something written across it in big letters. Wearing a t-shirt emblazoned Merry Xmas, in fact. Sometimes people write Christmas with an X. Merry Xmas, and sort of Christians don't like that because it's looks like you're crossing out the word Christ from Christmas. Wearing a t-shirt emblazoned Merry Xmas and jeans, Amazon, Armani, half price. So Santa is kind of not Santa anymore. He's just a guy in like discount branded clothing on a computer. He couldn't wait to straddle his snowped. A snowped, I imagine this is some like a moped. A moped is like a little bike, you know, a little motorbike, isn't it? A snowped would be like a sort of moped, a little motorbike for the snow, right? Can't wait to straddle it. If you straddle something, it means you get one leg on one side and the other leg on the other side, like you straddle a horse. You sit in a saddle, but you straddle the horse, meaning you put your legs on both sides of it. In this case, Santa couldn't wait to straddle his snowped. The bargain he'd bought on eBay. A bargain is something that you get for a really good price. A rocket-powered silver toboggan. Rocket-powered, well, I think we know what that means. A silver toboggan. A toboggan is another word for a sled, or a sledge, or a sleigh. Okay? Sledge, sled, or sleigh. I'm writing these here. Sledge, sled, or sleigh. All words to describe sort of things that slide along the snow. Santa has a sleigh. If you, when it snows, as kids, you want to get on a sledge and slide down the hill. Yeah. A rocket-powered silver toboggan. His supersonic sleigh. Then one morning, he thought, what is it? Then one morning, he thought, oh, why bother delivering presents by hand? Meaning, why make the effort? When it could all be done online, busy parents will understand. We're lucky to live in a digital age where the aim is access and speed. Santanet, I'll call the system. Santafaction guaranteed. It was kind of a lame joke. Satisfaction, Santafaction, yeah. And that was years and years ago. Now, this is where things go a little bit more sort of, what's the word for it? Melancholy. Because the poem turns at this point, it becomes a bit more melancholy. And he's saying that the moment when Santa decided to change, this was years ago, and basically Roger McGough is saying that now children have no conception of the original traditional things about Christmas. Times that children barely know. Midnight Mass and mistletoe. Midnight Mass is obviously when you go to the church service in the church at midnight on Christmas Eve. Mistletoe is another plant. We have holly, right? But mistletoe is another plant with green leaves and white berries. And you hold mistletoe in the air, and it's traditional to kiss under the mistletoe. Christmas carols, carols being songs, traditional songs that you sing at Christmas, like church songs probably. And candle glow, sleigh bells ringing across the snow, and Santa singing yo-ho-ho. For that was years and years ago, and that was years and years ago. So it kind of becomes a bit sad at the end because he's kind of saying we've lost touch with those traditions. You can actually see a video of Roger McGough reading that poem on the page for this episode. I would play it now, but I've already read it twice. So let's move on to the next one. Now, this next one, which is the third and final poem that we're going to look at in this episode, also written by Roger McGough, this Liverpool poet. Now, this one is called The Trouble with Snowmen. And this one also starts out quite sweet. It's about a dad talking about snowmen to his son. It starts out quite sweet and nice, but it kind of gets a bit dark. But I think it's a brilliant poem, even if it is quite sad. I find it quite moving. Anyway, let's see. I mean, obviously, it's a question of taste, isn't it? Some of you might be like, nah, not my cup of tea, Luke. To be honest, I prefer Grand Theft Auto 5. I don't know. I think it's possible to like both. Anyway, obviously it's not just Grand Theft Auto 5 or poetry. There are obviously many other possibilities. Shut up, Luke. Okay. So, The Trouble with Snowmen by Roger McGough. Here it is. Are you ready? The trouble with snowmen, said my father one year, is that they are no sooner made than they just disappear. I'll build you a snowman, and I'll build it to last. Add sand and cement, and then have it cast. And so every winter, he went on to explain, you shall have a snowman, be it sunshine or rain. And that snowman still stands, though my father is gone, out there in the garden, like an unmarked gravestone, staring up at the house, gross and misshapen, as if waiting for something bad to happen. For as the years pass and I grow older, when summers seem short and winters colder, the snowmen I envy, as I watch children play, are the ones that are made and then fade away. Ooh. I like that a lot. Let me go through it again. The trouble with snowmen, I mean, like the problem with snowmen, said my father one year, is that they are no sooner made than they just disappear. Meaning, like, as soon as they've been made, they disappear. Certainly in the UK anyway, because our snow doesn't usually hang around for very long. So the problem with snowmen is that, this is the father speaking, the problem with snowmen is, right, you build them, and as soon as you've built them, they disappear. That's no good, is it? The dad is kind of missing the point of snowmen here, isn't he? That's not the point. The point of the snowman is, it's the magic of the snowman, is that the snow arrives, you build the snowman, and then you kind of watch the snowman slowly disappear. That was always the kind of weird magic of it. Something strange and weird about that, right? That you build the snowman in the garden, and then every day, as the weather warms up, the snowman melts and melts and melts until there's just like a blob on the floor. I always found that quite fascinating to watch as a child. So that's the point of the snowman. But the father doesn't understand this. And he's saying, that's the problem with snowmen, is that they don't last forever. They just disappear. And he says to the boy, I'll build you a snowman, and I'll build it to last. And I'll add sand and cement, and then I'll have it cast. Sand and cement. Cement is like a sort of a stone powder. You add it to sand and water, and it creates a kind of, a solid, like a stone, cement is actually the word for it. I'll build you a snowman, and I'll make it last, and I'll add sand and cement, and then have it cast. If you have something cast, it's like you apply heat to it to make it really solid and solid. That'll do. And so every winter, he went on to explain, you shall have a snowman, be it sunshine or rain. Again, he's missing the point, because now we're going to have like a snowman made of rock in the garden. It's going to be there all year round. And even when there's no snow, you'll still have a snowman. He's kind of taking away the magic there. And that snowman still stands, the poet is saying, though my father is gone, out there in the garden, like an unmarked gravestone. That is a dark passage, because suddenly we're in the present, and the boy is grown up at this point. His father's gone. I mean, I don't know how. I'm assuming that his father has passed away, but the snowman is still there in the garden, like an unmarked gravestone. Oh, that's a tough one. Like an unmarked gravestone. It's just like this piece of stone in the garden just standing there, staring up at the house, gross and misshapen. Gross is like kind of disgusting. Misshapen is like out of shape. Standing, staring at the house, this snowman, waiting for something bad to happen. So this is more like just the emotional resonance of the fact that the guy, does he still live in the same house? But he's lost his father. It's sad. It's sad. I mean, you know, when you have feelings of grief or something, they're not always clear, crystal clear ideas. Instead, they're just weird feelings. Like certain things can make you feel really sad. Like, you know, like if you, like a stone snowman in the garden can be a really sad thing. It's going to get more lighthearted, I promise, this episode. For as the years passed and I grow older, when summers seem short and winters colder, which is, you know, it's true, when you get older, the summers get shorter and shorter. Winters get colder and colder as you get more sensitive to the cold. The snowmen I envy as I watch children play are the ones that are made and then fade away. So the guy, for some reason, feels sort of jealous of the other children who play with their snowmen that then disappear after a certain amount of time. I can't really put into words the sort of feelings that I get from that poem, but it's sad and therefore a good poem, because good poems are meant to make you feel something. I like the way that's done in plain English. It's not really complicated language. Obviously, there is a place for poetry that is written with extremely complex English, and, you know, like the work of Shakespeare or Wordsworth or other writers in the past. But I like that. I like that one from Roger McGough. Okay, let's move on. So that's the poetry section done. Let's move on to something different, something a bit disgusting. So we've had cynicism, we've had a bit of melancholy. Now let's have something a bit disgusting. Or is it? Maybe it's not disgusting. We will see. Maybe it's just a nice tradition. Maybe it's a good luck charm. This is an odd Christmas tradition from Catalonia. And it's the Caganer. I think I'm saying that correctly, the Caganer. Now, those of you who live in this part of the world, Catalonia, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Any listeners in Barcelona, for example, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here. All right, so Catalonia, if you don't know, is a region in northwestern Spain. That's probably a little bit controversial. It's in Spain, though I'm not sure they want to be. But anyway, it's a region of Europe in northwestern Spain, Catalonia. Barcelona is the most famous city there. Some of you may be there right now. It's a lovely part of the world. Apparently, they have a slightly odd tradition there, the Caganer. Now, what's the Caganer? It's actually a little figurine, a little figure, like a small statue or something that you might put on display at Christmas time. It's a little figure of a man pooing on the floor. It's a man with his trousers round his ankles. He's bending down and he's doing a poo on the floor. And like, The proper Caganer figurines actually have a poo as well, like a curled out poo on the floor underneath his bum. All right. Now, this is a tradition in this part of the world that people display these little figurines of a guy with his trousers around his ankles doing a poo. Now, you might think, ew, that's disgusting. Yuck. You might think that, but actually it is a long-standing tradition in the region and is a symbol of good luck and also a symbol of renewal for the coming new year. Now, this is an article from a website called nowiknow.com. Now, nowiknow.com is actually brilliant. It's an email list. If you go to nowiknow.com, and I'm not advertising them, I just subscribe to the email list, and every day you get interesting little stories in your inbox. So if you want to do some reading in English every day, and if you want to be sure that the stuff you're reading is going to be interesting and well written, then you should subscribe to nowiknow.com. Go to nowiknow.com and then just enter your email address. And then every day you'll be sent an email written by one guy. It's one guy working on this project. Every single day, some fascinating and funny little story. And so this is from the archives of nowiknow.com, and it's called The Tradition of Christmas Poo in Catalonia. You know what I mean by poo, don't you? Yeah? Do I need to describe it? We're going to have a few different words for poo, but it's when you know, we all do it. I'm sorry to say, and I'm not sorry to say it really. I'm quite happy to say that we all do it. It's something that unites all of us. We are all united. We're all part of the big poo family at Christmas time. I told you this was going to be a different version of Christmas. So the tradition of Christmas poo in Catalonia. I'm going to read the story from nowiknow.com. This was published in January 2012. Okay. You can read this by following the link on the website. In 1997, South Park, do you know it, the TV show? South Park, the not-for-kids cartoon, made its debut. meaning it was first shown on television. The show focuses on the lives of four elementary school students, Stan, Kyle, Kenny, and Cartman.
Screw you guys!
You know, Cartman. And it often crosses the line of good taste to make these kids' adventures into laugh-a-minute entertainment. Do you know South Park? You must do. I love South Park. I think it's incredibly bad taste and often very offensive, and I love it. It's hilarious. The first season of South Park had a Christmas episode, and it's a good example. It's as good of an example as any. So it's a good example of an episode of South Park. Kyle, one of the characters, who is Jewish, is chosen to play Joseph of Nazareth in the school play. Every year, I don't know about your countries, but I mean, the UK, it's a, you know, a Christian country. One of the traditions is that every year the school, I don't know if this is still going on. It probably is in most schools. Every year there is a Christmas nativity play, which is where the kids do a performance of like the story of the birth of Jesus. And there are different characters. For example, you've got Joseph of Nazareth. You've got Mary. You've got the wise men. You've got shepherds and stuff like that. So anyway, in this Christmas episode of South Park, Kyle, who is in fact Jewish, is chosen to play Joseph of Nazareth in the school play. Kyle's parents object to this. They disagree with this. And they object to this, and the town's grown-ups, the adults in the town, get into a heated argument about the appropriateness of such performances at a public school. Like, they get offended and they argue about, you know, religious performances at school. But Kyle has a solution. He wants to sing a song about Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo, an anthropomorphized rod of feces which wears a Santa hat. All right, you're following this? So the parents are all getting upset because of the religious nature of the school play. But Kyle, this little Jewish kid, he's got a solution. He wants to sing a song about Mr. Hanky. Now you're thinking, who's Mr. Hanky? Well, if you've seen the show, you'll know. Hanky! He's that little character who says that. He jumps out of the toilet and he's a little poo with a Christmas hat on. And he goes, "Howdy ho, children!" And he is Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo. He is an anthropomorphized rod of feces. If something is anthropomorphized, can you say that? Anthropomorphology or anthropomorphized, an anthropomorphized poo. If something is anthropomorphized, it means it's made into, it's sort of made like a human. So, for example, Bugs Bunny is an anthropomorphized rabbit. Okay, Mickey Mouse is an anthropomorphized mouse. Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo, is an anthropomorphized poo, which wears a Santa hat, which at this point only Kyle is aware of. So only Kyle is aware of Mr. Hanky. Maybe Kyle is just imagining the entire thing. We don't know. But Kyle argues that Mr. Hanky is the perfect compromise for this situation because he is non-denominational. He doesn't belong to any particular religion. And so because of this, because he's universal, he is completely inoffensive, right? Which is kind of true, isn't it, really, when you think about it? Okay, he's a poo with a Santa hat on, but there's no danger of him alienating any part of the community because, newsflash, we all do it. So anyway, in the real world, obviously Kyle would be wrong because I don't think anyone would want to celebrate a Christmas poo, even though it does unite all of us. I think in the real world, that wouldn't really work. But you might disagree if you live in Catalonia, because if you live in Catalonia, the manger, this is like the place where Jesus was born. It's like a place in a farm. The manger is like a barn where the animals stay. And so this is a manger. It's like a very simple place. So anyway, it's very common for like Christian families at Christmas to have a nativity scene. A nativity scene is like a little thing that you might make yourself, and it's like a little manger, and you have figurines for Mary and Joseph, figurines for the wise men and the shepherds. You have little toy animals in there, and you might have a little baby Jesus lying in the manger. Okay, so that's a nativity scene. It's very common in Christian households. We had one when I was a kid. Every Christmas we'd get it out, and there it is, the nativity scene. Never really thought about it very much. But there it is. Anyway, so in Catalonia, a manger is not a bona fide nativity scene, meaning it's not a genuine nativity scene, unless it features a defecating figurine called a caganer. Defecating is just a formal word for pooing. And feces, by the way, is the formal word for poo. Okay. Merry Christmas, everyone. So in Catalonia, a manger, a nativity scene, is not a proper one unless there is a pooing figurine called a caganer. Now, the caganer is seen, as seen in the example pictured above, and you can see a picture of the little guy with his trousers around his ankles doing a poo. The figurine is squatting with his pants down around his ankles with a pile of poop. Poop is what they say in American English. In British English, it's just poo. Important language. So, as tradition dictates, the caganer is to be placed somewhere in the nativity scene, but not in obvious view, right? So the caganer might be like hidden round a corner or behind like a wooden post or something, but he is there, but he's not in the center of the thing. He's just like in the background. But even if slightly hidden, for many Catalans, the caganer is a requisite element to the scene, a required element in the scene in Catalonia. The first one apparently appeared in the 16th or 17th century, but the reasons why are unknown, we think. There are many theories as to the caganer's meaning and no consensus. One line of thought suggests that the caganer is fertilizing the scene. So it's not uncommon to see a caganer in some sort of scene. And the idea is that it's a very old idea that because the guy is doing a poo on the ground, he's actually fertilizing the soil, right? Which is a sort of a symbol of renewal, that we fertilize the soil, which allows the soil to become rich. And then that allows the soil to produce crops for the new year. So it's a symbol of renewal. Another theory holds that the caganer is a representation of humanity's basic equality. After all, everybody poos. Or perhaps the caganer is simply a practical joke memorialized over years of repetition. While most of Catalonia appreciates the caganer, or in the case of the Catholic churches in the area, they tolerate the figurines, the city of Barcelona failed to include one in its 2005 nativity scene, citing a new ordinance which barred relieving oneself in public. Apparently, public urination and defecation were a serious problem in Barcelona before 2005, and apparently the ordinance was controversial. Okay, so there was a rule, a law that was made in 2005 which said you're not allowed to go to the toilet in public in this city anymore. That's it. No more pooing or peeing in the street. And some Barcelonans were like, "You can't tell us where to poo and where not to poo. How dare you?" Anyway, there was some controversial new law to kind of clean up. I don't know. I don't know if that was a serious problem in Barcelona. I'm not making a comment about the relative cleanliness of Barcelona. I mean, for God's sake, I live in Paris, and anyone who's spent any time here will know that it's not uncommon to see people urinating in the street here. Yes, I'm sorry all those people in other parts of the world who have this rosy romantic view of Paris. Well, if you get here, you'll realize it's not all like Amelie the movie. It's a bit of a dirty place too sometimes. Anyway, so there was a new law in 2005 in Barcelona that said no public toileting, and because of that, the nativity scene that they had in the city didn't have a caganer in it. But then other people in the city got the last laugh, because not only did Barcelona reintroduce the caganer in its 2006 nativity scene and its subsequent ones, but Barcelona is now home to a nearly 20-foot Cagenaire figurine, as you can see in the picture on the website on Now I Know. And if you click on the picture, it seems to be in some kind of like shopping center. Looks like a shopping precinct. There is a massive figurine of a guy in a Santa hat with his trousers around his ankles and a nicely, perfectly produced, curled out poo on the floor. And there's someone standing there having a look. And it's like the person is pretty much the same size as the product that has been produced, if you see what I mean. Okay. All right, there you go. Merry Christmas, everyone. Especially to the residents of Barcelona. Well done. Well done, guys. So what about you? You might find that utterly disgusting and completely inappropriate, and fair enough. I'm not telling you otherwise. But, I mean, you know, you can't argue with their local traditions, can you? No, of course you can't. All right, then. So what about you? Do you have any strange, like, traditions in your country or your area? Any funny Christmas traditions or New Year traditions or just any weird traditions at all? Again, I understand that you might not celebrate Christmas, but maybe you do weird things at this time of year or things that other people don't do. Let us know in the comments section. I'd love to find out all about it. And then finally, I told you that we would get an appearance from the Beatles. Well, here we go. Okay. Now we're still on the Christmas theme. Still on the Christmas theme, folks. And we're going to, what I thought we'd do at the end here is listen to a couple of Beatles Christmas records. Okay. Now the Beatles Christmas records, you might be thinking, why are we going to listen to this, Luke? Well, it's because it's interesting, it's funny, it's charming and silly. And maybe you've never heard the Beatles speaking before. And if you've never heard the Beatles speaking, you really need to change that. You need to hear them talking. Obviously, this was a band that were around in the 1960s, which is decades ago. And, you know, I don't live in the past or anything. I'm a big Beatles fan, but I'm not living in the past. I've got plenty of music that I'm into from the present day and stuff. But, you know, I can't deny I am a massive Beatles fan. And I don't expect everyone else in the world to be a huge Beatles fan too. But I think that you'll find, I mean, I think I would expect that if you, for example, if you have anything in common with me, if you enjoy the stuff that I do on the podcast, which I hope that you do, otherwise you're just listening to this like, I'm not enjoying this, but I must keep listening. If you enjoy any of the output that I do, then maybe you're on the same wavelength as me, and you might find that you enjoy listening to the Beatles too. And I don't just mean the music, but just them speaking and them just fooling around and being funny. So every year, the Beatles in the 1960s, they recorded a Christmas message for their fans. Obviously, they were huge, right? A phenomenon. They had a fan club. And every Christmas, they would record a Christmas message to their fans. The message was recorded and distributed to members of the Beatles fan club on floppy 7-inch flexi discs. Not really vinyl. It was kind of plastic or something. So these floppy records, they weren't proper vinyl. They were bendy. You could kind of, so they could be put in envelopes and posted to fans everywhere. And the fans would get the Christmas record, and it'd be like this floppy record, and you'd stick it on the record player and listen to the Beatles talking to you. This is in the days before we had email, social networking, podcasts, anything like that. So this was amazing. This was really cool. If you were a member of the fan club, every Christmas you get this record, and it's like a personal message from the Beatles to you. Now, my mum was a member of the fan club in the 1960s, and she got these records in the post, I think. I'm pretty sure she got them in the post. Anyway, she still had those records as James and I were growing up. My brother and I were growing up. We used to, you know, get all their records out and play them and stuff. And we used to listen to these Beatles Christmas records as children too. We used to enjoy listening to them. I think James is now the owner of these records. He kind of commandeered a lot of my parents' vinyl. I sincerely hope that he's looking after these Christmas records by the Beatles, because they will be worth quite a lot of money one day. Already, I think they are. I've seen Beatles Christmas records on eBay for over £300. I mean, they are, in some cases, very valuable, depending on which year. They started doing it in 1963, and they did it all the way up till 1969. pretty much every year of their career in the Beatles. And £300 for one, and it's only like 4 minutes worth of record. So it's, that's a lot. Anyway, so as well as being great songwriters, the Beatles were naturally very funny people. They were quick-witted, they were silly, and they were surreal, you know, absurd. They were, their humour was just kind of crazy, hard to explain. Part of that, part of their humour, is because they were from Liverpool, and Scousers, which is what we call people from Liverpool, a Scouser is someone from Liverpool, and Scouse is the name of the accent that they have. Scousers, naturally, are very witty people. Liverpool is known for having funny people. So it's partly because they came from Liverpool, but also partly because John, Paul, George, and Ringo were talented and funny in their own right. They didn't take themselves seriously at all, which is one of the reasons that they were so charming. And you can see this in their films. They made a few films, but probably the more famous ones being like A Hard Day's Night and Help, which is them in their earlier the earlier part of their career, being kind of funny and stuff on film. You can see their humour in their films, but really their humour came out best when they were just being spontaneous in interviews and in situations like this, where they're in the studio reading out some comments that were written by someone else, maybe a member of staff from the record company. So they're supposed to be reading out the messages that someone else has written for them. And it's basically messages saying, thanks for all the gifts, thanks for buying our records. They're supposed to be reading out these handwritten messages, but they just can't help fooling around. They're kind of just fooling around, joking around. They can't take it seriously, and the results are pretty funny. Their sense of humour is still fresh, I think, even though this was over 50 years ago. And it just shows how the Beatles were kind of ahead of their time. You get like comedy shows, British comedy shows, like obviously you got Monty Python, and then later on other stuff like The Mighty Boosh, or you know, just any of our wacky comedy stuff. The Beatles were on the ball with that kind of humour from day one. So I'm going to play you a couple of the Beatles records that I found on YouTube. The one from 1964 and then the one from 1965. Okay, so here are some things that you should look out for as you listen to this clip. We're going to listen to the 64 Beatles record first, okay? So here are some things that you can notice. I'm just going to go run through some of the stuff first before you listen to it to give you a chance to pick it up and get it, basically. Okay? So first of all, they seem to run towards the microphone and then run away again at the end. So there's kind of a sound effect of them running towards the microphone. The text that they are supposed to be reading was written by someone else and was written by hand. So they have some trouble reading it. What was the word that we had before? Remember that Christmas story about the missing £5 note? Do you remember? Something that's difficult to read? It's illegible, that's right. And handwriting. So there it is. The words, those words are coming back now. So it seems that they're having trouble reading the handwriting. It's probably kind of a bit illegible. So they keep making mistakes sometimes. And there are also little ad-libs. An ad-lib is like an improvised comment. So there are a few little ad-libs here and there. John, for example, keeps saying, "It says here," to show that he's reading someone else's words. So it'd be like, you know, "We had a fantastic Christmas, it says here." So "it says here," just to kind of self-consciously showing that he's reading from a text. Okay, it's, the whole thing is just tongue-in-cheek. Tongue-in-cheek is just means they're not doing it seriously. So you hear Paul thanking the fans. He says, you know, thanks for all your support. I don't know where we'd be without you. I don't know where we'd be without you, which is like a way of saying, we're very grateful to you. I don't know where we would be without you. So Paul's saying, I don't know where we'd be without you. And John instantly says, in the army, perhaps. It's not going to be funny when I say it, but it's just, I mean, it's not like super, they weren't comedians, they were musicians, but still, you'll see when you listen to it. So, I don't know where we'd be without you, and John's like, in the army, perhaps. Paul says, I hope you've enjoyed listening to the records as much as we've enjoyed melting them. I mean, making them. So he kind of just twists, you know, he just changes it. You expect him to say, I hope you've enjoyed listening to the records as much as we've enjoyed making them. But instead he says melting them, which is quite funny, isn't it? Paul then says, that's all, except to wish you a happy Christmas and a very new year. Which is quite nice wordplay. Obviously, normally it's a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, or in this case, it's a Happy Christmas and a Very New Year. John takes the microphone and immediately starts coughing loudly. And he says, thanks all for buying my book, because he wrote a book. He wrote two books, actually, during his career in the Beatles, which were full of nonsense poetry and surrealism. He said, thanks all for buying my book, and there's another one out pretty soon, it says here, showing that he's clearly reading from a text. It'll be the usual rubbish, but it won't cost much. You see, that's the bargain that we're going to strike up. Bit of vocab. If you strike up a bargain, it's like you make a deal. And the deal, apparently, that they made was that the book is full of the usual rubbish, but it'll be cheap. So, you know, self-deprecating humour. He says, I write them in my spare time, it says here. And then Paul chips in and says, did you write this yourself? And John says, no, no, it's somebody's bad handwriter. Now, handwriter is not a word. I don't know where he got that word from. But again, you expect him to say handwriting, but for some reason he says handwriter, which is kind of one of the things that John did. He just had a strange sense of humour and a way with words. No, no, it's somebody's bad handwriter. Thanks a lot and a happy Christmas and a merry goo year. Goo is like slime or mud or something. Like goo is like disgusting slime or mud. So thanks a lot and happy Christmas and a merry goo year. And George takes the microphone. You're going to hear their voices. They've got like, while they all sound the sort of the same, they all sound like Beatles. You know, they've got that sort of Beatles voice thing going on. They've got the sort of laconic sounding voice like the Beatles. But they also all have their own unique voices. So Paul sort of sounds, you know, more like this. Thanks a lot for buying our records. And John's got more of a nasal voice. And you'll see that they've got their own voices. And George says, I'd like to thank you for going to see the film. So one of the films they made. And he says, spect a lot of you saw it more than once. Spect is I expect. But for some reason he says, spect a lot of you saw it more than once. We had a quiet time making it. And in fact, George misreads the text and corrects himself. And he says, actually, we didn't. We had a great time making it. So it actually said great, but he read quiet by mistake. The next one should be completely different. And at this point, he goes into a strong Liverpool accent. And he says, this time it's going to be in colour. And immediately John says, green. So obviously, if a film is going to be in colour, it means it's going to be in all the colours. But John chips in with, you know, green. This time it's going to be in colour, green. Imagine if the film was just in green, that would be pretty good. And then Ringo takes the microphone. And when Ringo speaks, it's just funny. I can't explain why. I think it's just the way he delivers these pre-written lines in a slightly awkward and sweet manner. It's just Ringo being Ringo. While he's speaking, someone drops something in the background. You hear a kind of a crashing sound in the background, and he says, who's dropping that? It's just like a moment of him being natural. Who's dropping that? They were natural and never cheesy, never contrived, and that was very different at the time. One of the things about the Beatles in the way that they were groundbreaking is that they were just so natural, and their humour was just so uncontrived and natural. They were very real in a very formal world of show business. And Ringo says, those airport receptions knocked us out, man. Great. If something knocks you out, obviously you can be knocked out by in a boxing match, like boom, and you get hit and you lose consciousness. But also, if something knocks you out, it means it amazes you and surprises you, like wow. So the airport receptions, because when they arrived at airports, the fans would go wild and there'd be huge crowds of fans at the airports cheering and waiting for them. For example, when they arrived in Australia in 1964, it had been a couple of years that they'd been releasing records. So they were hugely famous in Australia. And the Australians had been like trying to persuade them to come for ages. And they finally came to Australia. And, you know, the reception that they received there was like the biggest reception that anyone had ever received at the airport. And so at the end, they then start singing and they break into a rendition of a song called oh, can you wash your father's shirt? Oh, can you wash it clean? oh, can you wash your father's shirt? Oh, can you wash it clean? Which I think is probably some old traditional song that people used to sing. And then they run away at the end again. All right, so now I've explained that to you. I'll let you listen to the Beatles' Christmas record from 1964. I hope you enjoy it. And then we'll listen to the one from 1965. Here we go.
Hello everybody, this is Paul, and I'd just like to thank you all for buying our records during the past year. We know you've been buying them because the sales have been very good, you see. Don't know where we'd be without you, really, though.
In the army, perhaps.
Oh, we hope you've enjoyed listening to the records as much as we've enjoyed melting them. No, that's wrong. Making them. We're in number 2 studio at the moment at EMI, taping this little message for you.
Yes, we are.
We are, indeed. I just thought I'd make the... This is the same studio we've used all along... Since the old days of Love Me Do. So many years ago, it seems.
Oh,
it?
Those are the days.
Well, that's about all, I think. Except to wish you all a happy Christmas and a very new year. Now I'll pass you over to John. John?
John speaking. Thanks all of you who bought me book. Thank you, folks, for buying it. It was very handy. And there's another one out pretty soon, it says here. Hope you buy that too. It'll be the usual rubbish, but it won't cost much. You see? That's the bargain we're going to strike up. I write them in my spare time, it says here. It's been a busy year.
Did you write this yourself?
No. It's somebody's bad hand wrote. It's been a busy year, Beetle Peedles. One way and another, but it's been a great year. Two. You fans have seen to that. Page 2. Thanks a lot, folks, and a happy... Happy Christmas and a merry goo year. Crimble, maybe. And I hand you to George, who'll speak to you. Now!
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Hi there.
I'd like to thank all of you for going to see the film. Spect a lot of you saw it more than once.
I did.
Did you? So did I. Thanks anyway, because it makes us very pleased, you know. We had a quiet time making it. Actually, we didn't. We had a great time making it. And we're glad it turned out okay. The next one should be completely different. We start shooting it in February. This time, it's going to be in colour.
Green.
It'll be a big laugh, we hope. Well, big laugh. Yeah,
Bean
it'll be a big laugh.
You and Megan?
And we may see all of you soon. Hope so. Anyway, all the best in Happy New Year and a Happy Christmas. And here's Ringo.
Thanks, George. Ringo, yeah? Well, the others have thanked you for the discs and John's book and for everything. For enjoying the film. I'd like to thank you just for being fans. It's been a funny year, you know. One minute we're in England, next we're away. Expect you're wondering where we've been.
So
well, Beatle people, we've been to Australia and America and who's top in there? New Zealand. And Australia.
And New Zealand.
Is that New Zealand? So much travelling... But you've stayed loyal, haven't you? Anyway, those airport receptions knocked us out, man. Great.
Dig.
Well, that's about it from me. I'd just like to say all the best for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Can you wash your father's shirt?
Can you wash your father's shirt?
Can you wash
your father's shirt? Can you wash it clean?
Christmas!
Everybody. Happy Christmas!
Happy Christmas!
All right, I hope you enjoyed that. It's just fun because they're obviously having a great time, and that's infectious, isn't it? I mean, I think it's good for you. I genuinely believe it's good for you to listen to that. I mean, for me, it makes me feel good. Just the sort of fun that they're having is infectious, and there's nothing wrong with that. Let's listen to another one. Okay, Luke. All right. So this is the next one from 1965, so a year later. Here are some more things to listen out for. So first of all, check out the nice crackling vinyl sound. You know the sound of vinyl. the lovely crackling vinyl sound at the beginning. Then you've got Paul saying, I've got to thank everyone for all the presents this year. And John says, especially the chewed up pieces of chewing gum. You know, a chewed up piece of chewing gum. Like you take a piece of chewing gum from the packet, put it in your mouth, nom, 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 you chew it up, and then it's a chewed up piece of chewing gum. And I think they actually did receive this kind of thing. They received all sorts of weird gifts from their fans, probably bits of chewed up chewing gum. And he says, especially the chewed up pieces of chewing gum and the playing cards made out of knickers. All right, a playing card, you know what a playing card is, you know, for playing poker or something. Playing cards made out of knickers. Knickers are underpants, aren't they? Girls' underpants. Now, I'm not sure about that. They probably did receive, like, homemade playing cards and stuff. They would have received a lot of homemade gifts from their fans. Maybe they received some knickers in the post too. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if they received playing cards made out of knickers. But again, this is just John with his weird sense of humour. And then John, in a creepy voice, says, on behalf of George and I'd just like to thank you for... And then it's inaudible. You can't hear what he's actually saying. On behalf of George and I'd just like to thank you for... And Paul says to Ringo, well, Ringo, what have we done this year? And Ringo immediately says, well, I see you haven't shaved again. I mean, I can't explain that, but there's just something funny about that. Well, Ringo, what have we done this year? Well, I see you haven't shaved again. John starts singing a made-up song. I think it's an improvised song in a strong Scottish accent with lyrics which are hard to understand. Because sometimes Scottish people speak in a dialect that English people don't understand. So there's this strong Scottish song that John starts singing. I can't do it myself. John used to make up nonsense poetry and songs on the spot. That's one of the things he used to do. He had a surreal, absurd sense of humour. The band then go into a version of Auld Lang Syne, which is a traditional Scots language poem written by George Burns, the famous Scottish poet. So it's a poem and it's a song as well. So they suddenly start singing Auld Lang Syne. It's a song which is sung in Scotland and many parts of the English-speaking world, it says here, in order to celebrate New Year's Eve. The boys here do a kind of silly version of it. And they continue to make up silly nonsense as they carry on recording the Christmas record. This one, the 1965 one, is much more silly than the 1964 one. It's as if the record company people or whoever ran the fan club basically had just given up on writing messages for them and have just let them record any nonsense into the microphone, which is great for us because it's just like, basically they said, okay, you got 5 minutes. We're going to switch on the microphone, just thank the fans and just do whatever you want. Go. And so you just got 5 minutes of improvised nonsense, basically. John improvises a song which sounds a bit like an Elvis record. Maybe Blue Christmas. I'll have a blue Christmas without you. And Ringo shouts, copyright, John. Meaning that he can't sing that because it's protected by copyright. Paul then puts on a heavy working class Liverpool accent and says, what are we going to do about... What is it? What does he say? What are we going to do that's out of copyright? What are we going to do that's out of copyright? And John replies in the same accent. Because they used to put on accents. They used to put on these strong Liverpool accents. Because, you know, these are accents of like working class guys that they would probably encounter in Liverpool in the Liverpool days. What are we going to do that's out of copyright? And John replies, how about we all gather lilacs in an old brown shoe? How about we all gather lilacs? Or how about we all pick some flowers in an old brown shoe? Now, I've got no idea what he's talking about, but I just like the sound of the accent. Maybe this is just an old reference that I don't get, or it's just John talking nonsense again. But I do like the way that they go into these different accents all the time. Apparently, they were always like this, including when recording their albums in the studio. In fact, it was their sense of humour that got them a recording contract with George Martin at EMI originally. It's the sense of humour that George Martin, their producer, noticed, and that's why he signed them. He was actually more impressed by their general humour than their music at the beginning, in the beginning. Although they later proved themselves in the music department, of course. So the boys do silly accents of of Scousers and old people and weather reporters on the radio. They do a Bob Dylan impression at one point. See if you can notice that. John begins singing a made-up Christmas song, and the lyrics end up becoming just weird noises, and the others join in. So he starts, like, you know, wishing you a Merry Christmas, and I hope the Christmas brings you... So the lyrics just kind of turn into weird noises, and the others start doing it too. John, in a strong Liverpool accent, says, "This is Johnny Rhythm saying goodnight to yous and all yous bless..." What is it? "This is Johnny Rhythm saying goodnight to yous all and God bless yous." Because in Liverpool, they sort of say yous instead of you when they're talking about multiple people. And Paul, in the same accent, says, "All right, well, that's got it done then. What are we going to do now?" And George, in the same accent, he goes, "Has he turned it off? Has he turned it off?" So listen for the way he says "turned," because that's like a really strong Liverpool accent. Not "turned," but "turned." "Has he turned it off?" Which is the Liverpool accent exaggerated. And then it's either Paul or Ringo that you hear saying, "Have you turned it off, la?" So "la" is a Scouse word meaning lad or mate. And then that's the end of their Christmas record for 1965. You might not hear absolutely every bit because I've broken it down and explained all of it there, or most of it. But you can find the videos for these on the page and you can listen to them again if you want to pay close attention. I find, and I think you'll find too, is that more that I listen to these, the more I... The better I get to know them, and therefore the better I'm able to enjoy them. The first time you hear them, it just sounds like random madness. But when you start to understand it more, you can kind of pick up on the humour and just enjoy it more and more. So this is the Beatles' Christmas record from 1965, and listen out for that nice vinyl crackle at the beginning.
"All my trouble seems so far away. Now it looks as though we're here to stay. I believe in yesterday."
Don't forget, Christmas is coming. Oh, that reminds me. Let's do a Christmas record.
Let's do a Christmas record.
Yeah, what should we say?
That's a good idea.
Ad-lib. We've got to thank everyone. Remember to thank.
Yeah, thank
you. You can't ad-lib too much because, you know, you miss... Well, thank you, Johnny. It's been nice to know you.
Got to thank everyone for all the presents this year.
Yes.
All for buying the records.
Yeah, especially the chewed up pieces of chewing gum and the playing cards made out of knickers.
On behalf of John and I, George speaking, I'd like to thank you for all the Christmas cards and presents and birthday cards and presents and everything too, as well.
On behalf of George and I, I'd just like to thank you all for the Christmas presents and all the rest of it.
Thank you. Well, Ringo, what have we done this year?
I see you haven't shaved again.
Well, Ringo, what have we done this year?
We've done a lot of things this year, Paul.
Yes.
Well, we've been away.
Yeah.
And like last year.
Hey, we've come back on.
Aye. We've had a lot of presents sent to us for our birthdays and Christmases.
Yes, we'd like to thank you.
Thank you for the presents and the cards.
Thank you for the presents.
Happy Christmas to your listeners, where in you can do. We belong to everybody, don't you nick you new. Away to the Jack McGregor pan his bunny ho. Hack your bunny Christmas with a pound of Irish stew.
Thank you, John.
Down in Virginia with the old black door, we got some, we got some. Down in Virginia with the old black door, we got some, we got some.
Well, for the sake of auld lang syne, that reminds me, Ringo.
Yes.
Last year,
he was here.
We was here, around the same old mic, same studio.
Same old guitar, same old faces.
It's the same old song, but a different meaning.
Copyright, Johnny.
Copyright, can't say that.
Hey, all right, what are we going to do? What's out of copyright?
We'll get the lilacs in an old brown shoe.
Yes, that's out of copyright.
But,
let's play a request for all the boys in B-A-O-R-E.
Yeah, all right.
Why don't you play for them? Because we got some fans in the forces.
Well, here in Munich, it's not quite as fine as it is in London.
Well, Kenneth, the weather's raining here. It's not very good.
Oh, it's not bad over here, but some of, you know, we had a bit of rain and all that.
Yeah. Stay tuned in. It's five-way link-up.
If you've enjoyed this programme, tune to 29314567 megacycles. If you can't find that, drop it.
Chica! Be a queen! Be a forgot and never brought to him. China! Down in Vietnam and China! And look at all those bodies.
Jordan!
China!
Floating in the river. Jordan!
Well, that looks as though it's about it for this
year.
Well,
that should cover Israel.
We certainly tried our best to
please everybody.
Please everybody. If we haven't done what we could have done, we've tried.
And if you haven't got yours, send fourpence in and get a free one.
And seeing as we gather around the Christmas microphone here in the studio, we might as well get together with a little Christmas message for you.
Which goes something like this.
Christmas comes but once a year, but when it does, you know it's here because we've got a
singing.
Christmas comes but once a year, but when it does, it brings good cheer because we've got the Christmas.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay.
Oh, bless
you all on Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
This year has turned out to be a big year for us.
Christmas Day.
One of our biggest years since we can remember.
Christmas Day.
And we can remember a lot of big years. Take bugs.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
And especially those abroad and those of you in BOR 2459783.
Christmas Day.
There's a lot of us here, one of which a lot of you there, and the weather's perfectly all right, thank you. And don't forget, the old and the new, some folks blue and some folks green. You take no notice of them, it's an all-white policy in this group.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Bless you all on Christmas Day.
Once a year.
Aye, and when it comes, it brings good cheer. So don't
Christmas Day. I'm the bad for my Christmas Day.
All right, fade it there, Charlie.
Thanks,
okay, put the red lights off.
Now, this is Johnny Rhythm just saying good night to you all, and God bless you.
All right, well, that's got it done then. What are we going to do now?
Has he turned it off?
I think he has. Have you turned it off, lad?
Hey, Basha.
And they're still the same.
Turn it off, Basha.
Okay, so that's the end of the 1965 Beatles Christmas record. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did, because I enjoyed it a lot. I think we'll leave it on that note then. Okay, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Thank you for being a listener. Thank you for paying attention. Good luck with your English. Merry Crimbo and have a very new year. All right. Speak to you again in 2019. All the best from me. And for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.